This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to the Escape Hour. Lovely to see and hear you all. I mean, I know you're out there, but we are all here. The team is back.
Apart from Russ.
Well, Russ is sort of like a side member of the team now.
He
very, very kindly offered to come in and share with us if we were short. But we have Stefan back.
Hello.
Welcome back, Stefan.
Thank you. Thanks, Fiona. It's great to be back.
And we have Mark on the panel. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Fiona. Welcome to the Escape Hour. Currently 1 minute past one. On a beautiful day in my mind.
Oh, I don't know. It's a little cold, a little dreary. I want warmer weather back. Not maybe 42 degrees.
Yeah, I was going to say 42.
But, you know, come on. It's supposed to be summer, and 16 degrees is not summer, I hate to tell you.
It's supposed to crack a top of 21 today.
I'm not believing it there. But, you know, when we are travelling, it doesn't matter what the weather is because, of course, Stefan has just been travelling all the way through Europe and we are going to talk about some of his marvellous travels today. And what was the coldest temperature you had while you were away?
It wasn't that bad. It probably was around minus 10.
That's bad.
Overnight.
That's bad.
Well, not that bad compared to what? Siberia?
I'm from Europe. It's not... It wasn't that bad.
But really, the part of France that you come from is coastal, isn't it? It doesn't get that cold and snowy. It's not like you're from Mont Blanc.
No, it doesn't. I was born in Marseille, lived in Normandy. It probably gets to minus 6, minus 7.
But the French Alps gets much colder
than that. But minus 10 was, but only for a couple of days. Not even days during the night.
And where was that?
That was in Bulgaria, in Sofia.
Bulgaria. We're going to talk a lot about Bulgaria because I don't think many of our listeners have been there. But if you have been there, let us know. I'd love to hear about your experiences. Yeah. We'll be talking about Bulgaria in the second half of the show. You can let us know your experiences or ask your questions about Bulgaria. SMS 0427 Joy 949. That's 0427 569 949, or email on air at joy.org.au. Fiona, you were also traipsing around this crazy brown land of ours.
I was in the greeny part.
The Emerald Isle of Tasmania. Yeah.
And, you know, I'd been to Tasmania a couple of times, but I hadn't really ventured much out of Hobart. So my partner and I were on a motorbike. A very high-powered motorbike. I just sat on the back. And we toured around Tassie, and we had a marvellous time. It's the Isle of Food and Drink, and we definitely got a lot of that in. I'm quite a foodie. My partner loves to consume lots of interesting alcohol, and there's lots down there. Did you know that there's 110 gin distilleries in Hobart? I mean, in Tasmania alone.
110?
110.
But it's gin.
A lot of whiskey, of course.
Where are they all?
They're just everywhere. I mean, you know, you've got a cider brewery.
The inebriated aisle.
Well, for all the visitors, anyway. So we took the Spirit of Tasmania, which I
also... And then you went and had Tasmanian spirits.
And I had Tasmanian spirits. That's exactly right. It was all very...
Bada bing, bada boom. That's why this is a volunteer radio station.
I don't know. I think some of the jokes they crack on commercial radio stations are, you know... Anyway.
Let's talk politics now.
So we had a wonderful time. We went on a wine tour through the Tamar Valley. We spent a little time in Launceston. We went to Freycinet and I hiked the most crowded trail I've ever been on in my entire life.
Cradle Mountain?
No, not crowded.
Tell us about that. You posted on Facebook, and I was equally as surprised as you many people were there.
I will admit it was peak season, so it was, a couple of days after Christmas. I was warned that it would be a very, very popular trail because you've got the Lookout Trail, which is from Freycinet in Freycinet Park area. You've got the Lookout Trail, which is like a brief sort of 30 to 40 minute walk, which gives you the lookout, and it's one of the most famous lookouts. Statistically, the number of people that go to this spot. And so I knew it was going to be busy, but I had no idea. I mean, you're talking about entire busloads of people that make this walk. like on masse.
Hundreds.
I mean, it's worse for the view, but was it really enjoyable?
Well, yes. I mean, I love being out in nature, and I love going on walks. So I did the walk to the lookout, and then I went down to the actual Wine Glass Bay and swam in Wine Glass Bay. There was a lot less people there. That was really beautiful. And, of course, interestingly, I always thought that Wine Glass Bay was because it was shaped like a wine glass. In actual fact, that's not why it's called Wine Glass Bay.
Oh, wow.
Well, because that was the centre, one of the many centres for whaling. During the period of time when people were destroying and killing whales and seals all over the place. And they called it Wine Glass Bay because there was so much blood in the bay, it turned wine-coloured.
That's much more macabre than the rather romantic view that it looks like,
it looks like a wine glass.
So I did learn something then. Anyway, it was incredibly, incredibly crowded on certain parts of the hike, and I seriously advocate the Tasmanian government. They need to think about ways that they can not limit numbers, but maybe manage numbers better. I mean, you know, in other countries, like in New Zealand, they only have certain people, a number of people on the hikes.
Yeah, and you have to book tickets and go to a particular time. I mean, it controls people to go through.
Exactly. Yeah. Allocated times. I mean, the trail itself, you can't go off the trail because the bush that's right next to it is so impenetrable. You're just like, I'm not stepping into that bush. So the trail itself is not going to get overly damaged because they've made the trail such that it can be tromped on by lots and lots and lots of people.
Mm.
And, of course, obviously from Wine Glass Bay, there are extended hikes you can do, which are very beautiful. So we did that, and then we explored Hobart. We went to Mona, of course. We saw the marvellous James Turrell exhibitions that are on there, which I've already been to before, but I had to go again.
So James Turrell, talk about his art.
So James Turrell is a famous, I think he's American or Canadian, I'll have to look that up, famous artist who works with large scale, look, I don't want to call them environmental because some of his work is outdoors, but large scale light installation pieces. He had a big retrospective exhibition in Canberra a couple of years ago, which I couldn't get to. I first saw his work at Naoshima in Japan.
Oh.
So what he does is he creates these light pieces which are fully immersive. So the one in Mona, you go into an egg, basically. Two at a time. You absolutely have to book for this experience. And you lie down and it is like sonic eye waves of colour. There's a little bit of sound, but it's just all absorbing. And so you're in this giant coloured egg that just keeps changing colours, and it's amazingly intense. They give you a lot of information beforehand because they say, for example, if you suffer from epilepsy, serious things like that, you would probably be not advised. He's also done, you know, then he has the opposite scale of that, which is where you go into a completely, completely darkened room where it's sensory deprivation. So as a counterpoint. So the James Turrell, and he's got a few other things happening over there, is amazing. Then we're in Hobart, then we're in...
So what was your favourite booze?
My favourite?
Yeah.
Well, we drank a gin that was made with sheep's milk.
Oh.
That sounds like feta schnapps.
No, so basically it's completely clear, so it's not cloudy in any way. So there was a farm...
Congealed lumps of feta in it.
No, that does sound a bit gross. But
it's like Goldschlager, but dairy.
You don't even notice it until you... I mean, if I was to give you a glass, you wouldn't notice that it had anything in it that was made from dairy. Mm. But when you know that's what it is, there is a slight sort of mouth feel that can bring on some... actually, maybe I can feel it in there.
Right. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you get to find out why they decided to add dairy to
well,
gin?
Because it's... I think the thing is that gin is the game these days.
It is.
And
it's
they
really
have
is, yeah.
a sheep milking farm, which is in a place called Bridges Bay, which is kind of opposite Bruny Island. And they were milking their sheep, and then I think they just sort of stumbled
on this...
Well,
let's make some gin out of it.
stumbled on this idea of incorporating the sheep's whey into the gin making process.
Oh, it's the way from the right.
It's the way. Yeah.
God, you wouldn't want to fall asleep around their place. You might end up in a gin.
You might. They are very, very, very clever people. And we went there and we ate cheese and drank gin. It was delicious.
Wow.
We went to some cideries. I don't even like cider, and it was delicious. You know, places like Willie Smith.
Were they all apple-based? Because I know the Apple Isle is famous for its apples.
I mean, interestingly, it was the Apple Isle for many, many years until there was a deal done with, I think, China to start sourcing a lot more apples from other countries. So this was a trade deal that was done in Australia. So all of a sudden, the Apple Isle lost like a massive part of its industry. I don't think that's gonna work
going
very well down there.
Going well today.
So they've had to completely reinvent themselves, and that's how they've got so many beautiful wineries. I mean, some of the
wineries. So they went nuts.
Yeah. Anyway, I would highly recommend a trip to Tassie for everyone. Mm. It's just a great destination.
I don't know anyone that's been to Tassie recently who hasn't absolutely raved about it. Mm.
The weather was brilliant.
How'd you get there?
The Spirit of Tasmania.
And motorbike, overnighter?
Motorbike, overnight. Look, the accommodation was extremely expensive wherever we went because we were in peak season.
Yeah. Ah, okay, yeah, fair enough.
What
was the quality like?
Overall, very, very good.
Yeah.
I don't like staying in caravan parks over the summer holidays because I don't like children that much.
Yeah.
So
fair enough. They're not really likeable.
We decided staying in nice accommodation. So, you know, it's not a cheap holiday.
Mm. Yeah.
By the time you pay for your cabin on the Spirit of Tasmania and the accommodation and then the meals out and then buying bottles of gin and shipping them back to Melbourne and, you know.
Right.
So, you know, it's not a cheap vacation, but it was certainly, you know, a high quality one.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that sounds fantastic.
Spent a bit of time in Launceston, which I'd never been to before.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty town, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Very leafy.
Pretty. Mm. Possibly a little bit boring, but I had a great time, did a beautiful hike in Cataract Gorge, ate in a couple of lovely restaurants.
Yeah. I don't think they sell Launceston as a place that's overly intriguing, but it is pretty.
Yeah.
I think it's the nature around it is what.
Exactly. There's a lot
to sort of stay as a hub.
And we did a champagne tour, a self-guided champagne tour, where we went to some champagne houses. And I asked one of the winemakers, why are there so many? There's like five champagne, sparkling wine houses in this one area of the Tamar Valley. And apparently, if it's at 41 degrees south and the Champagne region in France is 41 degrees north, and apparently you can just drill through the earth.
It's like a parallelogram.
That's exactly right. That's what they claim, and it's a combination of, you know, environmental things that seem to...
Right, and the soil and how the grapes
grow. Because it's relatively close to the coast, it's an even temperature. Anyway, so it is the sparkling wine region of Australia.
Mm. Yeah,
it's interesting.
Fantastic sparkling wines come out of Tasmania.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, the two.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that was my little jaunt.
But we were talking before the show that some flight bargains with Stefan and some places you can go. And you know, it's interesting you were saying how expensive it was because there are some destinations you can go. It's only a slight financial bump up to business class, particularly during peak season because families have filled economy at the higher prices and no one's sitting in business class. So with a little extra, and that's not for everybody. Not everyone wants to dedicate their resources that way. But tell us about some of those prices you'd found, Stefan.
For Bali. Oh, yeah. I was looking around to go to Bali in January, and you can find some business class flights where you have a
Garuda.
The
national carrier.
National carrier for around a little bit more than the economy flights,
and you
lie down. I mean, it's only 6.5 hours or so, but you know, if you have an overnight flight, and you can actually afford to then go back to work the next day and not take an extra day leave, which is, I think, is the advantage. And when you balance that out against the cost of not working or using that leave, at another time, I think it's worthwhile.
Because a lot of the flights out of Bali are overnight.
Even if you get, you know, if you get 4 hours.
Yeah,
you probably can function for a day.
And the other thing is that if you haven't had any experience with business class,
this is
probably the least expensive business class because it's a short leg flight.
Yeah.
I mean, I have flown business class On Garuda and, oh, no, first class on Garuda because someone else bought me a ticket and it was delightful.
And yeah, so a lot of business class is prohibitively expensive and that's why people don't fly it. You know, it could be three times the economy price.
But what I would say, though, is you have to be really careful which airline you choose out of Australia to Indonesia because the business class product will be completely different. So if you fly, you fly with some...
Other flag carrier
from Australia, you will end up in a seat similar to economy seat or premium economy. And then whilst if you fly with Garuda or others, you will have a fully flat bed. So it's
That's
really
true.
You have to be really careful.
Not all airlines are equal.
Mm. That is true. You're at Joy 94.9. If you've got any comments like our...
We have a comment.
Like our Love Tassie comment here, who feels drunk just listening to
me. Thank you. SMS message from 623. Oh, my God, I'm drunk just listening. Love Tassie.
Yeah.
Yay.
You're at Joy 94.9. If you've got some more questions, particularly with regards to Bulgaria or particularly Sofia, where you stayed, let us know. You can message us on 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We have Mark, Stefan and Fiona, and we are talking all things, well, up until a few minutes ago, all things Tassie, and quickly moved on to flights. And I think that we're going to now head via an airplane with Stefan to Europe.
Yeah, because the whole point of talking about flights, which are segueing into the next thing, is when you're having a look for flights, most people look on their comparative websites, most people look... book themselves. They don't go to travel agents. But if you go to a travel agent or you do look when you're searching, but also include the business class option instead of just looking at economy, which I always look at economy, and it's surprising how many airlines on particular legs have really good offers for business class. It might be an affordable treat or in a way to extend, as Stefan was saying, another day because you can sleep overnight on a flight.
Certainly beneficial if you're going for work as well.
It's worth considering. And, I mean, and sometimes it's not that much more expensive.
And you have to, but you have to balance up what you would want to do with the extra money as well. And sometimes it's not worth it because you can do much more. So, and depending on your means as well. And,
But a lot of different things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you flew business class.
I did.
And you flew it on the longest flight.
Yeah, decided to...
That's also a good reason to fly business class.
Decided to fly from Melbourne to Perth, then on to London with Qantas, which has been flying that for a few months now.
Yeah, it's quite famous for the longest leg in the world.
I think... Going out, it's 17 hours and 45 minutes. Coming back, it's a little bit shorter at just a 16 hours.
Because the world's turning.
Because of the prevailing winds and all that. So I didn't find it that long because we were in business class, but James, my husband, for reason that I don't need to go into, we flew on separate aircrafts on the way out. So he got there before me and I got there 10 or 15 hours later because there was some problem with my flights. But when I asked him how was the flight, because I hadn't done it at the time, he said it was a bit long.
That was the thing.
Because when you think about it, you know, even if you sleep for 8 hours, you still have another seven or
8 hours.
Or another 8 or 9 hours to go. And there's only so many films you can watch. However, on the way back, because we flew on New Year's Day, so there was New Year's Eve party we went to in Paris with some friend. Only slept for 2.5 hours. So I was able to get a good nine hours sleep. And that felt quite reasonable. I probably watched another couple of movies.
And then what happens? How do you feel when you land in Perth and then say, I've got another four hours to get home?
But at least you can stretch your legs.
Well, you can stretch your leg if we were in business, so we have a shower. You've got access to a lounge. They've got this thing where there was a person, and I felt a little bit sorry for her because nobody took her offer, but she was doing a relaxation and stretching class. but I must say that we got into Perth early, so instead of an hour and a half in Perth, we had near to 2 hours, and I just want to go there. I've had enough. I just want to get back on that plane and get to Melbourne
Yeah, get in your own house just, at the stages.
Yeah, like at that home. Point, I thought, yes, I've had a shower because I asked the attendant, you know, one of the lounge person, I said, well, when are we going? I said, well, just go and have a shower. Do it. I said, no, I've had a shower already. I don't want a second one.
Yeah. I'm clean.
I just
I'm
want
clean.
To go. When are we boarding?
Just move this bucket of bolts.
And, because there are some people that would prefer to fly a few shorter flights, stop in Singapore or Dubai and, you know, sort of extend it. That's another way of travelling.
And just get off a plane. But then again, if you have to get somewhere...
And you want to get there quickly.
Yeah, it's not a bad option.
So, but it was a good, you know, they couldn't be... The people on the flight, the flight attendants were brilliant. They were very caring. I mean, obviously, in business, you get a different service as well. But the food was good. The alcohol was good. It was fine.
Yeah, it's a very different experience.
I'm sure. I don't know that I would want to do that in economy because I don't know that... You can actually relax and sleep and not get annoyed because what I found difficult in economy is the people around me that keep moving, that keep poking your seats with the in-flight entertainment and your head moves backward and forward.
That's
constantly.
Right. Yeah.
And then people that want to go to the loo, people that want to do this and I don't know that I would have the patience for 17 hours for that, so I might want to stab somebody.
I get it. I've flown a lot of economy long haul, and it's...
So have I, and that's why...
Very frustrating.
It is quite frustrating. But, you know, if you can, and we could at the time do it in business, we just decided to do that.
And, I think that my mum and dad have a really good policy. They, obviously at the age where they... take a lot of river tours. They're very popular these days. And so what they do is they spend the money on business class tickets. They're in their 80s or late 70s. Yeah. And then they get lower berths on the boat. Because we're not going to spend that much time in our room on the boat. We're going to be out and about.
Yeah, so they spend the money on the journey.
They spend the money on the flight to be more comfortable and then they save money on the bus.
I think that's right. It's all about balancing out what you want to do. And also, I must say that I felt more rested when I got there. So it didn't take me three days to get over this long journey. And I went back to... we landed in Melbourne on Wednesday evening. I was back at work on Monday... was back at work on Thursday at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was fine for doing a full day's work. And
that's right, because the cost of jet lag, which can be immobilizing for some people.
Yeah, and what I recommend people to do as well, and I think we've talked about it on the show before, is to set your watch to to where you're going. So we boarded 11:55 in London. It was around 10 p.m. in Perth, so had some food and then went straight to sleep then and tried to already get into that time zone.
That
rather
is
than,
good advice.
Yeah, rather than do that when you arrived here.
And Stefan, tell us, now you were flying to London, but London was not one, I mean, was only one of your destinations.
Only one of the destinations, so we
quite
did...
a lineup of destinations.
Quite a lineup of destinations.
Obviously, being French and wanting to go over for Christmas to be with my family, we went to France. We also went to England for a few days. Germany to catch up with some friends hadn't seen for a while, and Sofia, so Bulgaria, but just Sofia because we wanted somewhere special to spend our first anniversary. We got married last year on 16th December in France, so we wanted somewhere to celebrate. And it came about a little bit weirdly because we had somebody on the show that was talking about Georgia, and I was very, I don't know if you remember.
That's right, Aiden, the lovely Aiden.
Aiden Raftery. Yeah. And I was really taken by his description of Georgia, and I was thinking, I really want to go to Georgia, but it looked so difficult to get to from Europe. It's actually easier to get to from Australia because it's, you know, it's closer than when you're in Paris, than having to go to Georgia when you need to fly by Turkey or Moscow.
Oh, yes.
So then I was thinking, well, I've never been to Eastern Europe, and we happened to watch a show on Bulgaria with James, my husband, and we thought, oh, why not? Well, he didn't say anything. And I said, I said, well, why not?
Look, where we're going.
Yeah, look, I think I'm going to book some flights to Bulgaria. And that's how we decided to go. And Sofia, because we stayed for only four nights, so Sofia was the focus.
And on the way, where else were you?
So Munich as well.
So talk to us about Munich.
Munich, yes.
Yeah, so Paris was lovely, family.
Oh, Paris was lovely.
Yeah.
And then England was lovely as well, although I found it really expensive. I don't know.
It's an exchange rate.
Since I've lived there. I want to say, London was the only gay place we went to. We went to the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. People have heard about it, and it was actually a fantastic evening out we had there. And it's somewhere I would recommend gay, lesbian, or GLBTIQ people to try.
So what was special about that place?
What was special? It was a Tuesday evening, so you wouldn't expect a lot of things, but it was a show where they had a lot of... it was a queer show, so they were really showcasing local artists and local talent. Their approach to it as well was good, because they had some... I don't know if I'm going to do it justice, but I think they were... They had some bears in the audience, but not bears as, you know, have we ever our Brecky bears of... But there were people that you could cuddle if you felt... In some sort of distress, or if you felt unsafe, or confronted by some of the anxious and things. So and I thought that was really a good.
That is gorgeous.
That was really a good. So there were people that volunteered to do that. So they get to see the show for free.
Yeah.
Because you have to. I think it's £6 to get in, and also they then volunteer and support people that might be confronted by some of the act or might not be comfortable going out in this queer space, even though being queer themselves. So I thought that was really. Something that I thought would be really good.
Yes. And then Munich.
Munich, yes. Never been to Munich. Been to Germany a couple of times. Went to Hamburg and Berlin.
Yeah, Munich's very different, isn't it?
Munich was very different. Mm. Obviously, being in December, there was loads of Christmas markets.
Yeah.
Alexanderplatz, which was one of the main parts, riddled with Christmas market and Bratwurst and Glühwein.
Yeah.
Which I am not a fan of Glühwein at all.
It's wine.
It's hot wine. It's mulled wine.
Mulled wine.
Okay. And something I like, but there was one of the Christmas market was a gay Christmas market, so it was all
how divine.
It was all pink, and there was pink.
Right.
So because they've got an area where there was a few gay bars, and
is that Maximilianstrasse?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there was a Christmas market there, and where we got one of those mugs, and they had an apricot Glühwein, which was actually lovely. Which I got quite taken by that.
I just think the name Glühwein is just such a... definitely is not selling it.
G-L-U-H, glue, yeah, not G-L-U-E.
Yeah. It just sounds like glue.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
But you were talking before that you did something a bit confronting while you were there.
I did.
There.
I come from...
And that's not the gay Christmas market.
No, it wasn't. No, that wasn't confronting. That was quite lovely. I come from a family which is half Jewish. My dad's side of the family is Jewish, and my mum's side is Catholic. And I've always obviously heard about the Holocaust and something. It's been something obviously to talk. And I always said to myself, I will not go and visit concentration camp.
Mm.
It was something I didn't want to do. I just thought it would be too difficult. And having seen movies, having seen all things, and then being in Munich, very close from Dachau, and I thought, I don't want to go, but I don't feel that I cannot go, being so close and being, you know, trying to explore this part of the history that is quite gruesome, really. So we did go, and it was a very cold day. It wasn't minus 10, but it was around minus 2, minus 3, so already you had this atmosphere. I think it's absolutely massive. The area is massive, because not only they had the concentration camp, which was a prisoner camp, but also a SS training camp there. So the two together, the space, the area is absolutely massive, and most of it has been destroyed and then reconstructed for history, to show people. I think I
didn't feel as confronted as I thought I was going to be, because the history of that camp is that it wasn't an extermination camp by design. It was originally a prisoner camp, which then built up, and they had a gas chamber. But in the history, when we did a guided tour, and
it wasn't as productive as other places.
Well, they stressed that the gas chamber was never used there. It was used for experiments, but not for mass extermination, like Auschwitz or Birkenau, where people were sent. Despite that, it was quite confronting. You could see the evolution of, from originally the prison camp or working, where the birth and the condition were acceptable in a way, because they had beds with little shelves, and then it became worse and worse the more people. I think it was designed for something like 3,000 people, and they had 30,000 at the end when it was liberated, so it was quite awful. It's really, as I say, it's not something I wanted to do, but it's something I'm glad I've done. I don't know that I could go to other camps now.
It is confronting. I went to school in Germany, and they made us. It was a part of the curriculum. They made us go.
There were some school groups. There were some German school groups. But
never again was the message.
To what extent, though, when you see what's happening in countries like Hungary or Brazil the rise of nationalism and populism. Yes, I know that in my own country, in France, the National France changed its name because it wasn't popular enough.
Is it Marine Le Pen?
Yes.
So what have they changed it to?
I think it's something with the national national
reemergence or something. Oh, okay.
Rather than National Front, because National Front obviously has got quite a negative...
Nazi.
Yes.
And certainly, I know that during, not that long ago in Paris, of course, there was just those terrible, terrible riots. Mm. That was...
The Yellow Vests.
The Yellow Vests, which sort of, I think, from what I gather, started out as a protest on one thing and then just became like a free-for-all for anyone who wanted to object or protest.
It started out because the current government wanted to introduce a tax on diesel fuel. So for years in France, diesel was promoted as the fuel, the cleanest fuel and the cheapest fuel that you could have. So a lot of people drive diesel car in France. And now in order to try to reduce pollution and to meet the Paris Agreement, they've decided to introduce, to increase it. So diesel had lower taxes than petrol, so they increased the taxes on diesel from 1st January to make it at the same level as
after petrol. Encouraging people to buy diesel cars for decades.
After, absolutely. So there is a little bit of discrepancy here.
And then it's all of course the workers who have diesel utilities
of
and
course,
trucks. And
yeah. So that's what sparked that. And then now the main thing was that people want, like they do in Switzerland, being able to put up ideas for referendums. Mm. So that's one of the big...
This is very much how the Swiss electoral system works. Yes, they put ideas up a lot and the nation votes on them. So it takes power out of politics.
If you get to a certain number of... but we were a certain number of people that support that idea. But we were actually caught up in some riots in Rouen, where... and we were tear gassed and everything.
That would have been unpleasant, an awful experience.
Was this around the anniversary?
No, it wasn't. That was after Christmas. After Christmas, just before we went back to Paris for New Year's Eve. People were burning rubbish thing, and then there was the riot police, and then we thought we need to go, so we went to a bar and had a couple of drinks and waited, and then it was still going, and so we really need to go back to our place. And that's where there was still the tear gas going. And I was like, oh my God, it's...
Wow.
Yeah, but it was quite... It was
Yeah, wow. So I didn't expect a tear gas story today.
No, well, I just remembered it.
Exactly. I mean, as we were talking, it suddenly occurred to me that Stefan would have been in Paris at that time. Mm. And, I mean, we could talk a lot more about that, but I think that we'll move on at this stage.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
We've got Stefan, our own guest.
Stefan is our own guest.
So just like the mafia, we hunt and kill our own. So you've just come back.
Yes.
You're in Munich. You're in Paris. But you're also...
in Bulgaria, in Sofia. So we went from Paris to Munich on the train. I thought it would be a nice train journey. I didn't factor in the fact that the train left at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and it got dark at 4 o'clock, so we couldn't really see anything for 5 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, still, this was quite nice to get 300 kilometres an hour, as you know.
So I caught the train through the Gutenberg Tunnel from... Zurich to Milan. That was fun.
Yeah, I quite like train journeys in Europe. I wouldn't do them in Australia because it's. But in Europe, it's fun. Mm. And we
You've got the right population, and it makes sense. Trains make sense, and because they've been such a critical mode of travel for so long. They're really well established, and they're really well done.
Mostly,
a lot of people move by train.
Yeah. And it's cheap and
it's cheap. It's timely. Yes.
So and then we flew to Bulgaria, but via London, somehow because of the flights we were able to get, and flew to Sofia, So
tell us about Sofia.
Well, it's not a place we've heard a lot about. I think it's I had never been to Eastern Europe, so. That's something I wanted to do, and Sofia kind of sparked my interest. So got into it's part of Europe now. So if you've got a European passport or Australian passport, it's quite easy to get into. You don't need visa or anything. They're not in the Eurozone, but the currency, which is the lev, is pegged to the euro. So again, if you're a European or if you've got euros, it's easy because the exchange rate is not going to change. You know exactly what you get for your euros, and it is. Still a country which is relatively cheap compared to the rest of Europe.
Because of the accommodation that you had sounded palatial.
Yeah, it was palatial, and we cost us an equivalent $120 for a night in a 5-star hotel, and we got a nice suite. An upgrade which was absolutely lovely. And that hotel happened to have a French concierge who spotted my name and came to me and started introducing himself in French to me, and actually was brilliant in organizing quite a lot of restaurants for us. So we sampled traditional Bulgarian food and as well. And he had been, as a concierge, obviously explored the scene food and being French. And he was telling us about the different type of Bulgarian food there is and the scene now. So they've got shows like MasterChef, and they've got this really expensive restaurant which are quite... he described them as pretentious because they tried to replicate those things, and it was telling us that they're not the best value for money restaurant because they overcharge for what you get.
Okay, so how do you typify sort of Bulgarian food? Yeah, what was your experience?
We went to a couple of restaurants that were kind of. Traditional Bulgarian food, but with a modern twist. So using meat, I think they use a lot of pork, duck as well. So we had some...
rich.
Fairly rich, but also a lot of root vegetables because of the
So potatoes, carrots, turnips.
Mm. this kind
onion.
Of
onion.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm. So I think, I mean, the food we had was really good for.
Well, apparently, the Bulgarian cuisine is one of the more prized cuisines of Eastern Europe.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh,
so that's what I was reading about today. And there are certainly some really well-known national dishes. you know, it sort of has influences from the Greek influences. You know,
so
you have moussaka and you have other sort of Turkish elements, yogurt soups and tripe soup and...
Yes, yeah, so I didn't sample the tripe soup.
Oh,
no. We did have a lot of... we did have some cured meat as an appetizer, you know, as a starter, and that was quite lovely. Mm. It's less so if you're vegetarian, obviously, but
much in the way of seafood, because it's on the Black Sea.
It is on the Black Sea. It's not something I looked into because James doesn't eat seafood, so it's kind of usually ruled out.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I might have had some salmon.
Yep.
But that probably wasn't from the Black Sea.
I don't know if salmon comes from the Black Sea,
I don't think it was from the Black Sea.
The wine industry, I believe, is massive also in Bulgaria.
Yeah, we've sampled a few wines and they were really, really nice.
So what kind of...
Red, mostly reds.
Sort of light or a deeper? Is it
deep, quite deep.
So more like a Shiraz.
Shiraz type wine. And now, that, just remember you talking about gin, and we were in a bar and we could see this... the barman doing this kind of concoction with an ice cube. So Bulgaria is also very famous for growing roses, and a lot of perfume makers source their roses in Bulgaria.
Oh.
And so I could see something in an ice cube. So the next day we went back to that bar and I said, okay, what was that that drink? And said, oh, it's just gin tonic. I said, no, there was something in the ice cube. I said, oh, no, it's a rose. So there was a rose in the ice cube, and then they sprayed, so instead of gin tonic, Hendrix gin, and then sprayed with rose essence. So you had a very subtle...
Rose
water scent with your gin and tonic.
That sounds ideal. We need to bring that to Australia.
Which was...
I'm feeling this rose water gin and tonic.
Absolutely lovely. Yeah, it was... and that came across that just by accident, just by asking, well, what was that? Mm. Because it looked weird. I was wondering what was in that ice cube.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was... So the ice was infused with rose and also the essence.
And what was it like getting out and about in Sofia?
So it's very easy. I think Sofia is quite compact, and so we walked to most places. There is there's a lot of churches, traditional Russian Orthodox churches, but also Catholic. So different. There's mosques. So and there is a square where they've got a mosque, a synagogue, and a church. Just within
all facing each other.
All facing each other and with no problem. We visited a synagogue, which is one of the... and I expected it to be Eastern European Jewish synagogue, but it's not. It was one of the Sephardic synagogue, the only one they have in Eastern Europe, because they had quite a lot of immigration from Spain.
Right.
So, which is the second biggest synagogue in... Sephardic synagogue in... in Europe. So very famous Catholic Cathedral, Alexander Nevsky Cathedral with a gold dome, so which you see in all the pictures, and the room we had was facing that synagogue, so it was absolutely beautiful view. And we visited that. And as I said, very compact. They've got there's two lines of underground, but you can walk to most places. It's really easy.
And if you were perhaps, you know, you'd seen a couple of churches and you felt like you'd done kind of that historical component, what other things would you see in Sofia? I mean, is there some museums or art galleries?
So there are museums. There's art galleries as well. We went to a opera because I don't know. I had this thing that I wanted to see a classical. James is a piano. It plays the piano very well and likes classical music. So So when I inquired about what to see, it was quite difficult because they use Cyrillic alphabet. So websites were challenging to
Right, so there wasn't a lot of English translation.
No. So I emailed the hotel. I said, listen, do you know what shows would be on? And they said, oh, yes, we've got Mamma Mia. Which is...
Mamma Mia.
But yeah, first time in Bulgaria, we can get you tickets for that. And I said, no, thank you.
She's right.
But they had the Traviata was on. And so we went to see the Traviata.
It was sung in a traditional in Italian.
In Italian, it was sung in Italian with surtitles in Bulgarian and English. Oh, so okay. It was easy to. But it was something magical for me to be in opera theatre in Eastern Europe. I don't know why. Mm. This was probably a romantic idea.
And
for
did
me.
It fulfil the romantic
it
idea?
It did. It was absolutely brilliant.
That sounds wonderful,
then. It was brilliant. And, so we wanted to see something either classical music or opera, but not Mamma Mia.
No, not in anybody's language.
I don't think that's classic. I think it's a classic, not classical.
Mark, you're on fire today.
Yes.
I tell you.
But it's ABBA.
So they do have a very well-known philharmonic orchestra as well, but it wasn't playing at the time. They weren't playing anything at the time. So that was... So there are other things to do, but it is mostly old ruins. If you ski in the summer, 20 minutes from the city centre, there is the Mount Vitosha, which is a ski resort. So they've got ski lifts, and also you've got beautiful views of the of Sofia. And on the way, there is a church, which is 600 years old church, with very, very small, with ceiling painting predating some of the ceiling painting in Italy. So you can only visit this church if you make an appointment. They only allow 8 people at the time. It's UNESCO listed. And you
it's
can
a World Heritage Site.
Yeah, World Heritage Site. Only 10 people in the church. It's called Boyana Church. And only 10 minutes. So 8 people for a maximum of 10 minutes. And there's a guide in there that tells you everything. And she was she actually was more comfortable speaking to us in French than in English, which was interesting.
Which brings up the question, how easy is it to travel around Bulgaria? Do people speak English or French or anything else but Bulgarian and Russian?
I think because we were in Sofia, most people were very... And we were in the hotel, you know, that 5-star... English was easy. In the restaurant we went to, they had menus in English or in Bulgarian.
Right.
So it was very easy. Mm. As I was saying, booking tickets for that opera was difficult, so that's why I emailed the hotel.
Yeah.
Because it was, even with translation from now, most browsers can do translation, wasn't quite easy. Mm. But then we realized, being there, that you can, I mean, being a French speaker, and I don't know, English is the same, you can actually recognize some words that are in Cyrillic, but this looks similar to French words, for example. Which was interesting. I'm not saying...
There'd be some Latin-based words, I'm sure. Yeah, we could piece together.
Love listening to Joy podcasts? Why not volunteer for our program production team and help us reach a greater audience so more people can enjoy our fantastic LGBTI content? Email me, Pete, to find out more. ppc@joy.org.au. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
With the close of 2018, why not review the year that was through Joy Podcast? The Babble Pop team run through their top 12 picks for best songs for 2018. Macca and the team have spent some time putting together the 10 most downloaded SatMac podcasts of the year, and they're all available now. And The Escape Hour ourselves spend time exploring the biggest food and travel trends of 2018, but also upcoming trends. All this podcast and many more available wherever you go, wherever you get your podcasts. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thank you, Stefan, for that. We've had a lovely donation.
I know, we've had a lovely donation. David from Hotham Hill, donation of $14.95. Thank you, David. That's a good Samaritan's work today on Saturday. And we hope that David will inspire plenty of other people to donate the same.
Mm.
So we're almost coming to the end of another Escape Hour. how quickly it goes. So, Stefan, in a wrap-up on Bulgaria and Sofia, you know, I mean, obviously there was lots of beautiful things that you saw and delicious things that you ate. Would you encourage our listeners to go, or would you be inspired to return and see more of the country and Eastern European, Eastern Europe?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, Sofia is probably a city you can do in 4 to 5 days in terms of walking around, doing things. But there are a lot of other things you can do around. I wouldn't mind doing some wine tours. I wouldn't mind exploring the Black Sea coast as well. Apparently, it's quite popular in summer, and it's not well attended. You know, there isn't a lot of tourists yet going to these places.
So it's quite undiscovered.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. You know, I've been speaking French for the last 5 weeks, and it's a little bit difficult. Some friends, when I told them I was going to Bulgaria, where it was staying, you know, because in Europe there's a lot of stag and hen parties that go to Poland with all this cheap flights.
Latvia.
And they said to me, oh, you probably come across that as well. And no, I don't think Bulgaria is one of those destinations yet. So it's still a place I would recommend to explore.
So how did you find it for LGBT travelers?
So it's part of Europe, so they can't discriminate, obviously. They don't have same-sex wedding. But it's still pretty much a macho environment, right. And I think I wouldn't want to display it in affection between men, between women, this kind of things.
So would you go back? Would you go back?
Well, yeah, because I didn't feel unsafe. So, you know, on my compass, I didn't feel unsafe. It didn't feel a situation, a place that wasn't safe.
Yep.
I wouldn't hold hand.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't do that in Melbourne anyway. So
This has been a great show. Thank you very much, Stefan.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Stefan.
I might come back next week.
We'll have you back next week. So next week we are we are doing something a little closer at home, the Mornington Peninsula. We will be having Luke Gooley from Montalto Wines and Tux Ridge, who will be coming in, and he's going to give us some hidden secrets of the Mornington Peninsula.
Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.